From KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. There's a question that runs through director Kurt Wallen's documentary film about the early days of racing on the Bonneville Salt Flats. Wallen profiles Ab Jenkins, the Utah man who first introduced the racing world to the flats and who broke dozens of records there. The question is why they do it, why people like Jenkins get obsessed with racing and motors. The historian Louise Ann Noeth says she knows why.
They've got an idea. It wells up inside of them. They think this concept. They draw it in chalk on the floor. They build it up. They make it safe. They take it to tech. They get it sanctioned, and they go out there and they see what it'll do. What's the question? What's the ultimate question? How fast will it go?
Today in the program, we're profiling Kurt Wallen's film, talking about Ab Jenkins and the others who are driven to go faster. After the news. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. You never know where you're going to find your passion. For Ab Jenkins, a mild-mannered building contractor from Spanish Fork, Utah, it just happened to be the Bonneville Salt Flats. Jenkins loved to go fast, and at some point in his life, he discovered that he could go faster than anywhere on the planet in one of the most forbidding places on the planet. You can find the Bonneville Salt about 120 miles west of Salt Lake City. Mark Twain described the area as a vast, waveless ocean, stricken and dead and turned to ashes. But Jenkins saw something else. He saw miles and miles of open, flat ground, perfect for burying the gas pedal. Jenkins set more than 150 records there in the 30s and 40s. 12 of them still stand today. The filmmaker Kurt Wallen has produced a documentary that tells Ab Jenkins' story. And today in the program, we're talking about Jenkins and what one historian called Jenkins' hallowed ground, the Bonneville Salt Flats. The film is called The Boys of Bonneville, and we'll tell you more about that film as we go. You can join us. 801-585-WEST is the number to join us. Our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. Kurt Wallen is joining us here, director and producer and director of photography of well. He created numerous television and film projects. He's the director of Boys of Bonneville, Racing on a Ribbon of Salt. Kurt Wallen, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
John Green is with us. He is producer and editor of the film. He's worked for nearly 20 years as a creative director for television and advertising. And welcome to you.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
We're also joined by Land Speed Louise Noeth, who is a photojournalist and writer who concentrates on land speed racing. She's the author of the book Bonneville Salt Flats, The Fastest Place on Earth. She writes a monthly column called Fuel for Thought for the magazine Good Guys Gazette. And Louise is joining us today from St. Louis Public Radio in St. Louis, Missouri. And Louise Noeth, welcome to you. Thanks very much for being with us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
I should mention the newly restored Mormon Meteor will be on display tonight in downtown Salt Lake City. The film opens in Salt Lake theaters this Friday, and we'll give you details about that as we go along. Okay, so Kurt Wallen, I wanted to begin by having you describe what it's like out there on the Salt Flats. For someone who has no idea, I mean, Utahns, they go there from time to time. You're on your way to Wendover or some other place. You see it. But what's it like? I mean, you filmed there. How do you describe the place?
That is probably one of the more desolate places you could be on Earth.
Yeah.
And it's as white as it gets. It is so bright and hot, extremely hot. I can't imagine sitting out there for days and days on end driving a car around on that place. It's incredible. It's one of the most beautiful places, too.
Mm-hmm.
I've been in the middle of it for days. I've walked around the edges with John Green. I've found arrowheads out there, fossils. Amazing. Never seen anything running around out there. There's nothing alive. Not a blade of grass. Nothing. So everybody should take a stop when they go out that direction. People just drive by, and it's amazing how many people in Utah have no idea what we're talking about. They drive right by it. They didn't even know that's what it is.
Yeah.
That's
Louise, you've been out there plenty. How do you see it? Beautiful is the word Kurt Wallen used. Do you agree?
Well, considering it used by the astronauts as a landmark from space, I guess it's probably one of those great wonders. It's a place where I have seen personally end-to-end rainbows, triple rainbows, by the way, where you could see both ends. End-to-end and stacked on top of each other. It's where the unaided eye, no binoculars, no glasses, you can see so much nothing that you'll see the curvature of the Earth.
Wow. John Green, it's interesting how the image of the salt flats changed. I mean, today we see it as this place where there's speed and it's open and it's free, but it used to be this kind of seen as this imposing, you know, really frightening kind of place.
Well, absolutely. You know, the Donner Party bogged down on the Salt Flats, and that didn't end well. And then in about 1898, a gentleman, Salt Laker Chamber of Commerce guy named Bill Rischel, at the behest of the Hearst newspaper chain, was trying to scout a route for a cross-country bicycle race, as I remember. And he went out there and nearly died from lack of water. Luckily found a spring and was able to make it back. But in about 1910, Ab went out there and on his motorcycle and stood there. And you really got to give him some real credit for being a visionary, because he stood there and saw it for what it was, but he saw into the future, a future that had just begun with the advent of the internal combustion engine. And he went out there and said, hey, maybe somebody could run a vehicle on this. And he rode his motorcycle, but, you know, it took a lot of daring to go out there alone, 120 miles from Salt Lake, and stand there and say, I'm going to go try this out. I'm going to go out there and go as fast as I can, and hopefully I come back alive.
Yeah, I guess you couldn't count for a AAA to come and pick you up if something happened.
That's right. That's exactly. I mean, Louise North, nothing was paved in those days. I mean, or at least
paved.
Not much.
There was no roads, darling.
Right.
I was just out there the other day driving back from California, and I stopped because I looked out right where they were racing, you know, 10 days ago. There was a dust devil, a huge one, but it's actually a salt devil.
Wow.
It had to have been maybe an eighth of a mile in diameter, just screaming across there. And I was thinking, my God, that's amazing.
Yeah, so, that's microdermabrasion the hard way.
That is. That would be brutal.
So, Kurt, well, we'll talk a little bit about the film before we start get into more stories about Ab Jenkins. I guess it began as kind of a smaller project. And I guess what was it that interested you? I mean, you're not a gearhead. That wasn't your interest early on. So what was it about this idea?
Right. Well, John Price, a local businessman here in Salt Lake, has a new museum, Price Museum of Speed. He acquired the car from longtime, if you want to call, owner Marv Jenkins, Ab Jenkins' son. And he asked me to investigate how we could put together a nice 10-minute film on the rebuild of the engine that he was going to do with Marv. So he sent me down to St. George, where the car was in Marv's garage, and he said, go see what you can find. Memorabilia, anything, Kurt. So I went down there, found this box of film that Marv had in the closet, 10,000 feet. And
wow.
At that point, you know, I was just charged to be, you know, a regular video guy, put a video together. At that point, transferred the film, had it restored, and said, you know, John, this is more than just an engine rebuild story we're going to have here. And he went through the footage and said, wow, this is a story that must be told. We have to perpetuate history. That's his goal. That's why he has this foundation. So off we went, thinking, hey, in a year we'll have a nice film.
Right.
Well, here we are 4 years later. Wow. So,
well, I wanted to ask about, I mean, the film is about a lot of things, right? It's about Ab's story. It's about Marv, his son, the kind of arc of his life. You know, you find that in there. It's about the flats itself, about it as a place. I mean, it's kind of a character in the film almost, I have to say. It's about a time when this sort of – you hand-built things. Like there weren't any computers. There weren't any wind tunnels. I mean that's an extraordinary part of it. So it's about a lot of things, this film.
It is. Building the characters, always in a documentary – it's the most important part.
Yeah.
The place is always a character. This is an amazing character, Bonneville. The car, the Meteor 3, is also one of the main characters. It is the vehicle, if you want to call that, of the story.
True.
And, you know, it's one of the untold American stories that needs to be out there. Because, like you said, back there in the 1930s, the Great Depression, some of the toughest times. They had to do everything on their own. They didn't have the computers, the technology, all of those things. They didn't have the money, but they still persevered. And the story of Ab is he's the pioneer of speed. This is a man who, against all odds, he went out and did something that anybody else would think is impossible. And they did think it was impossible, other than the British later on. They tried. But Ab, in the end, there he was. So yeah,
and they beat him up and they charged him money for trying to see his vision through as well.
Exactly, didn't they?
We'll get to those stories. I wonder, Louise Noeth, the film is about this lure of speed. How do you explain that draw of racing? Is it just speed, or what is it that makes these people go out into these forbidding conditions and try this thing? What is it?
Well, you ever hear that fella Hillary who marched up that big old mountain? It was because it was there, It was something they did. There was a monk, a 13th century monk, Roger Bacon, who used to get regularly hauled in over the carpet for talking about things scientific. But he said, one day we will endow chariots with incredible speed without the aid of any animal. That almost got his head cut off. It's a sense, just from the very beginning, any time we could motate other than our own legs, even from running races, you can go back that far, how fast will it go? That is the ultimate question that is put and answered every time a car arrives at the starting line on the Bonneville Salt Flats. Or truck or motorcycle, I don't want to get in trouble with the other guys.
No, of course. But I guess the question for me, and this is goes to what made Ab unique, is like, what makes a person good at this? What's the talent? What made Ab Jenkins good at this? What's
timing.
The timing?
Timing, because you got to remember when he was born and when he was a young man full of ideals. Aren't we all full of ideals when we're young? We can conquer the whole stinking world when we're about 16. Well, the car was just getting born as well. It was just coming into its own. And when Ab first drove his first motorcycle and then his first car, he was stricken. He was struck like the kids were struck in the 60s when Kennedy said, we're going to send a man to the moon and return him safely. It just ignited the children, not only in the United States, but around the world in science, technology, engineering, and math courses. Of course, that's now all fallen off, but you get my point.
But, okay, his timing was good. He happened to be born into this age when everything is new in that way. But not anyone could just go out there and be – was it his stamina? Was it his focus? Was it
– Oh, it was certainly stamina.
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking today here in these nice, cozy little radio booths, and there is a 48-hour record still on the books that no one since 1940 has broken, in as well as 15 other records that this man set in 1940 that are still there for anybody to come and get, and no one has been able to get them. The 24-hour record that he set, it took 8 drivers from General Motors on a fancy-dancy track to break that record, about a decade or so ago.
So I want to, John Green, you were talking before about how Ab, when he first encounters the Salt Flats, and he's on this motorcycle, which seems extraordinary in of itself, because he's headed to – I want to play this clip from the film. Help set this up. He's headed to Reno. He's headed to Reno
yes.
on a motorcycle.
Yes, yes.
Right?
Yes. He was a boxing fan, and he was a boxing fan throughout his life, as we're told. But he wanted to go see the Johnson-Jeffries fight, the first of many fights of the century, the 20th century. But it was a racially charged fight. Originally scheduled to be held in Salt Lake City, but the legislature outlawed prize fighting, moved to Reno, Nevada, and Ab said, "Well, I'm going to go anyway." So he took his Yale motorcycle and he rode out on the railroad tracks, 120-ish miles, bouncing along on the railroad tracks on his way to Reno, and on the way he encountered the Bonneville Salt Flats, and it was a fateful day.
Well, here is a clip from the film. These are the words of Ab Jenkins read throughout the film by the actor Patrick Dempsey.
I had to travel over sagebrush waste that knew no roads. I lifted my 125-pound mount over fences. I plowed through mud and dodged sprays of desert dust. But it was worth it. I grabbed a firm grip on the two handles. I spread my body out straight as though driving a snow sled. Stiffened my legs, and I gave her the works. 50, 60, 70, 80. That was traveling. It was the first time anyone had ever motored across the flats. And right then and there, I realized the tremendous possibility of these beds for speed.
We should mention Patrick Dempsey, the actor's interest in the film. He has this similar kind of obsession that Ab did, I guess, with speed.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Patrick is amazing. race car driver and team owner for the GT series, Rolex series racing. He does 24 hours racing, and so he has a real familiarity with this sport. I remember several years ago, I was talking to Brian Miller of Miller Motorsports Park, and I knew that Patrick was always out there racing around, practicing, doing other races. And I said, that guy could be good for our film. Let's interview him. But that never came through. Then when we decided, hey, we need a narrator, we need a first-person read, who are we going to have? We had a little list, and I put Patrick Dempsey on there, and through Geraldine Dreyfuss, our executive producer, we were able to get a screener to him. And I was laying on my couch, 10 o'clock at night, half asleep, and I got a call from Patrick Dempsey. And he said, Kurt, this is Patrick. I want to narrate this film. This is amazing. That hallucination scene that you have in there, that's what I'm watching right now, and I've been through this. So I need to read this. Several weeks later, there we were. Fantastic. He did a great job.
I want to play a bit of that scene, actually, just and talk about this for a moment, because this is on his – I guess it's on his first run, at least in the film. This is, I think, 1932 or something like that. And we're talking about endurance racing now. And Louise Noeth, what do we mean by endurance racing? We're talking about someone pasted in the cockpit of a car for 24, 48 hours, I guess. This is and this idea of hallucinating, I guess if you're just going round and round and round, I mean things would play tricks on you, I guess.
Yeah, the Bonneville Salt Flats is known for two things. Most people today think of straight line racing, the world record and all of that. But it started, again, remember the beginning of the car, endurance racing, because the automakers had to prove to the general public that these cars were better than trains or their buggies and their carts and so on and so forth. So it was a classic case of win on Sunday and you would sell it on Monday in the showroom. And these endurance records showed that these vehicles could do that. And that's what AB hooked into with Studebaker and then Pierce Arrow and finally with the Duesenbergs. They would set up first a 12-mile and then it shrunk down to a 10-mile circle. And during the day, it was no big deal. You had various markers and flags. But at night, they had the old smudge pots with oil and diesel. And you would have to just follow this little flickering flame and stay on the inside of it. Well, after a certain amount of time running around in a circle, your mind just plays tricks on you. It's a bit of a vertigo. It really is a hallucination. And you've got to have your wits about you to maintain focus. Because remember, he was going over 100 miles an hour.
Right over my shoulder, the sun's going down, which means I'm driving into its blinding rays 4 miles out of every 12 and a half. The track is next to invisible, and the intense reflected light bores through my goggles. Then, darkness rushes across the flats. I pass flickering kerosene flares, dripping yellow light across my path. It gets darker, and the mirages begin to form. The track takes on a banked appearance. It seems as if I'm driving in a great salt bowl whose sides slope sharply upward. They undulate slowly. And then the reflectors reaching out ahead of me into the darkness begin to climb up into the sky until I'm traveling down a highway with overhead streetlights. I don't let it worry me. I've seen the earth and the lights put on their tumbling act before. I know they don't mean it. The important thing is, I'm clipping off records now.
It's Patrick Dempsey reading the words of Ab Jenkins in Kurt Wallen's film Boys of Bonneville, Racing on a Ribbon of Salt. Kurt Wallen is with us here along with John Green, producer and editor of the film, and Land Speed Louise Noeth, the author of Bonneville Salt Flats, The Fastest Place on Earth, also joining us. Tonight at 6 o'clock, Mayor Ralph Becker and County Mayor Peter Caroon are going to be declaring today Ab Jenkins Day, the newly restored Mormon Meteor, along with 40 Ford GT racing cars are going to be on display until 8 o'clock. The event is going to be held at the Rose Wagner Performing Arts Center in downtown Salt Lake City. On Friday, the filmmakers are going to be on hand at the 7:30 screening of Boys of Bonneville at Jordan Commons, and the Mormon Meteor will be on display there as well. And there's also going to be a Pinewood Derby. For more information, visit us at KUER.org/Radio West. We'll take a brief break. Back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER and Sirius XM Public Radio. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're talking about the Mormon Meteor. It's a race car, and in its day, it was almost as famous as the man who helped build it and set records with it, Ab Jenkins. There's a new film that tells Jenkins' story. It's about his obsession with speed and his gifts as a driver. He would drive for hours and hours over time. He set dozens of land speed records. The film is called Boys of Bonneville, Racing on a Ribbon of Salt. It opens in Utah on Friday. We'll give you details about all of that as we go. We have with us today the director of the film, Kurt Wallen, producer and editor of the film, John Green, also with us. And we have also the historian, land speed, Louise Noeth, joining us from St. Louis today. All right, so let's talk about Louise Noeth, let me start with you. So what is it that makes the flats, the salt flats, so unique? I mean, and a lot of people wonder, okay, is it really salt? Is it soft? Is it – I mean, what is it that makes that place good for speed? Is it just that it's an open space, or what is it about the salt?
On the good days, it's the hardness. It's hard as granite. When land speed racing started in Southern California, it was done on the dry lake playas, the dirt. So when a car would get a flat tire, the steel wheels would dig in, and many times it would flip the car. And, of course, there was no safety equipment, so the damage to driver and to car was probably pretty extensive. At Bonneville, if you were to get that same flat tire with that same steel wheel, you would probably end up spinning out and embarrassing yourself, but you would be alive to come back and race another day. And that was the main reason. It was a safety. Plus, I mean, you could be totally blind and go 100 miles an hour for 10 minutes out there and never hit a doggone thing. So it was the vastness of it as well. I think the reason that people would come to Bonneville, there was no undulation. Sometimes you'd have up and down and whoop-de-doos. But from what I can gather, there is, I think, 1.5 inches over 15 some miles. I could be wrong on that. But to give you an idea, it's a very little slope over a long distance.
A couple of months ago, I was driving out there, and I saw some poor sap who had decided to drive out there in his truck, and his girlfriend was looking incredibly irritated as he was talking on his cell phone, and he was completely stuck.
$500.
Is that how much it is?
Yeah. Minimum $500. Ka-ching.
Well, we should say also that underneath this salt, and sometimes it's not so thick, is just this gooey, goopy mud.
Oh, baby, that's mud that will suck a lace boot off a Marine's foot. It is the nasty stuff. See, Bonneville is like a big, giant bowl that tapers at the ends, at the far ends. And, and John had mentioned about the Donner Party. That's why the Donners got stuck, because those big, heavy Conestoga wagons, which, by the way, might have been Studebakers. That's how those boys got started in the wheel business. Those oxens and the wagons would break through that thin salt, and it is a dickens to get out of that stuff. You learn. I have that sound in my head, and when I hear it, I immediately go the other way on the salt. I just know.
Kurt Wallen, there's this great clip in the film where we see, I think it might be Ab, I'm not sure, but someone from the crew, a couple of people actually, picking up the salt and putting it on their on a hard-boiled egg. Now, I'm guessing it's probably that was for effect, but this is pure salt, I guess, for the most part anyway.
There are some other minerals in there,
sure.
But yeah, it's salt, and you could eat it. I don't know if I would eat it, but I mean, wow, that was Ab.
And early in the season, I'd eat it.
Yeah, early in the season. Yeah, don't
right,
do it now.
Right.
After
not
the big
after
races.
Speed Week. That's kind of like yellow snow.
Well, we should say that that Ab gets this idea to race to do this, and I guess John Green he does it without. In those days, you had to get sanctioned, and you had to get the Automobile Association to sanction you, and he. They weren't interested. They knew it was complicated to get out there. They didn't want to take their people out there. Mm-hmm. Ab Jenkins does it anyway.
He does it anyway. You know, the racers, the British racers, and one of the best places in the world to go fast was Daytona Beach. And Daytona Beach is no salt flats and vice versa. Hmm. Daytona, luxury hotels, fabulous restaurants, lots of fans to come out and cheer you on, and lots of people to help you with the car and all of that. And Bonneville in the 1930s, there was nothing there. Salt Lake was 120 miles away, and nobody really had been out on the salt anyway. And so it took a lot of convincing to get not only the help that Ab needed for himself, but also to get the British racers there later. But point being, Ab needed to have others judge his record as being official. And he went to the AAA and he said, I'm going to try and do this. And they said, you know, I don't know. We don't have enough time. It's kind of out there. You know, it's hot. The inspectors don't really want to do it. No, we'll get back to you. But Ab had worked with the Pierce Arrow Company to convince them to let him take one of their cars, drive it from Buffalo, New York, go out there and see how fast that car would go. And in fact, he even helped engineer the car to go as fast as possible. So not only did he discover this place, he put the funding and the engineering in place to help, you know, try and achieve some sort of record out there. So when he went to the AAA, it had to have been disappointing because he was this close.
Yeah.
And so he said, well, you know, it's a free country. I'm going to go out there and try this. But I think Louise can tell us what happened next.
Wasn't so free.
No, you got to understand that the AAA contest board, they ruled with an iron fist. And if you did something that they did not sanction, bless, or otherwise give them, you know, their approval of, you were in big trouble. And in fact, so was Ab. Now, he didn't ask for any kind of official recognition. He just went out there and did it, as John said, because so much had been done in preparation. And for these fellows to just, with the wave of a hand, say, no, we're not interested, mainly because it was too hot and they couldn't get a steak dinner afterwards. they said, no, you couldn't do it. And he said, no, I'm going to go ahead and just prove that this is a place, AAA, that you can do this. And that was Ab's intention. You have to understand that Ab Jenkson was not a mean or a forceful kind of guy. He was a very pleasant, easygoing, and completely, I mean, Mr. Congeniality. So it wasn't that he did it with a mean streak. He did it more to show AAA that, yes, this is an absolute place, because he had tremendous faith in the Bonneville Salt Flats. And for his trouble and for his goodness, he was fined $500. Now, in 1932, that was a wad of cash.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the record was not recognized. As a matter of fact, he had finished the race, hopped in a plane, and flew back to Salt Lake to a chamber meeting to report what he had just done. And most of the folks did not believe him. He was stone deaf because he hadn't really put the earplugs in the right way for 24 hours of listening to this open pipe car. And the local newspaper said it was just a game and would refuse to print it because they thought it was he was a faker. He was a liar. And this was before he had established himself as a reputable racer and so on and so forth. So he went up against, he took a lot of verbal and professional beatings for doing that in 1932. But then he went back in 1933 and went, neener, 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 I can do it.
and he got that one sanctioned.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, maybe not like neener, neener, neener.
No. Yeah, he didn't seem like the neener, neener type, but you never know.
That's Louise with neener.
Right. Kurt Walland, I want to play a moment. This is from, this is one of those archival clips that we hear. We'll also hear Patrick Dempsey reading Ab Jenkins' voice. But what I like about this, and here's where we start to see Marv, his son. There's a moment when they're he's giving him his watch as luck, and all this archival footage that you play in the film. Say something a little bit about that, because someone is narrating this. I mean, it's like a newsreel that we're seeing. I mean, what was it at the time?
Yeah, not so much a newsreel back then for Ab. His sponsors put together these films.
Huh.
They would use them at trade shows, that kind of thing. Also safety videos, because Ab was big into safety.
Yeah.
He was the safety man of the automobile industry. Mm. So that's where that stuff came from. And to see that film, it's their sync sound. This is rare footage.
Yeah.
And it's in beautiful restored condition now, where you get to see Marv, yeah, and then listen to the Marv and Ab talk. And this is when Marv was, I guess, probably 12, 13 years old in those clips.
Mm-hmm.
Unbelievable. And you can sense, you know, the love they had for each other. Yeah. That clip really
It's playful
tells the
way
story.
They are there. You can't see it by hearing it alone. You have to see it. But also, I had to ask, what are they rubbing on his face? there are a couple of times. Is it like...
Goose grease.
What was it?
Goose grease.
What was that? Why? Why?
Because we didn't have SPF anything back then.
Is that what it was?
And yeah. The salt, remember I told you about microdermabrasion?
Absolutely.
Well, when you would kick those things up, when the wheels would go around, there were no fenders on those things. And the heavily treaded tires would kick up the salt spray. Now, people think the salt is dry in the summer. It's never dry. The Bonneville salt flats are always wet. So when you put a heavy car on something that's slightly damp, it peels off a slight little tiny layer and it spits it back on the tire and it would go right up into Ab's face because there were no windshields in most of the cars. There were a little cowling that would hopefully move the airflow up and over his head, but he got quite a beating in the face. So they would put the grease on so that it would help to essentially slick the surface, which was his face, from getting beat up from the salt.
Wow. Well, here's another clip from Kurt Wallen's film, Boys of Bonneville, Racing on a Ribbon of Salt.
He pops a stick of chewing gum. You never guess that he was starting on the most punishing test of man and machine in the history of the motor car.
What do you actually think you're going to do? That's about speed.
Well, I've got to stay above 120 miles an hour past the 1,000-mile mark in order to get that record.
Now I had other people relying on me besides my family. I had to send a message across the Atlantic, and this time it had to be official.
Good luck to you, fella.
Thank you.
Say, when you get through with this, say, you'll have skin like Lillian Russell's was when you come back.
Thank you.
Don't mention it.
Well, Dad, I've got a present for you to carry around. I want you to carry around my Ingersoll. The watch to tell you what time to come in at.
Think that'll give me good luck?
Yes, I know it will. I want to wish you all the luck in the world.
Well, your nose is peeling.
So is yours.
Yeah, we see that little playfulness between the two. And I have to say, Kurt Wallen, a lot of the film is about that relationship. It's not just about Ab, it's Marv, his efforts that, you know, to sort of continue the legacy of his father.
Yeah, in fact, this film is not a car film like people would think. This goes very deep into a legacy film. Carrying on that legacy, Marv, he exemplifies his father all the way through. And it goes into what happens in the end modern-wise with John Price, taking that history and taking the perseverance and the ingenuity all the way through today so that we can just continue and to teach the youth that you can make things happen. That's what this is all about. But you also get the car history in there and such.
Yeah.
But Marv, great character, just an incredible person.
Well, I've got to – there's a question raised in this film that I've got to get to, which you'll see in the clip. First, this clip sort of goes to one of the reasons Ab Jenkins said he had kind of the stamina that he had to do this. He credits his Mormon upbringing. You mentioned John Price. We're going to hear him in this clip. Also, Marvin Jenkins, his son, talking about his endurance. And just it's nice because, you know, we'll hear, I think, a little bit of sound from a pit stop that he makes, this image of Ab drinking milk. And orange juice, of course, as you'll hear in this clip, again, from the Boys of Bonneville.
Ab had a great faith. He believed that it was a negative to have any alcohol consumption or tobacco consumption. And he felt that living a clean life that he lived added to his endurance. He'd come in at a pit stop, drink orange juice or milk. Nothing else. Now that's incredible to go 24 hours just drinking orange juice or milk.
Oh yeah, he loved milk, and my mother was there all the time, every pit stop that he ever made.
How do you feel?
Fine.
Now I never asked where it all went because he never got out of the car, and he didn't have bathroom facilities on board, so we can only conjecture.
All right, that's the question, though, I have to say. I mean, how do you relieve yourself, Louise Noeth, on a 24-hour endurance?
Oh, you're going to ask me how to do that? I'm not a guy.
Was there a way? Did people have a way? I mean, there had to have been. I had to say.
I have two things to say.
Okay.
Rubber hose and funnel. Yeah, same thing. Kind of the same premise they have on the space station. Boys.
Got it. Okay.
You know, Desiree Wilson said it right in when we interviewed her. In modern times, you just do. If you have to, you know, now they switch drivers and such, you know, you live with it. So, but out there, I'll tell you right now, dehydration. He drank milk and he drank orange juice, but quite honestly, it was so hot, 116 degrees.
Wasn't much else coming out.
Yeah, I mean, you're just burning it off. And, and he's not just sitting there. You think he's just sitting there. He's exerting a lot of energy, holding on, turning left for 24 straight hours. It's just got to be so tough. So, yeah, he's burning it off.
Yeah, and in the early days, as we mentioned, the wind is coming at him at 120 miles an hour, so that's definitely going to wick some moisture away from you, goose grease or no goose grease, I suppose.
Well, it's interesting, too. John Green, talk a little bit about how he, Ab Jenkins, communicates, because it's incredibly novel. I have a great idea.
You know, that's just part of what he had to do, is he had to basically pioneer methods for getting to the salt, getting infrastructure to the salt, and then figuring out how to run these races. But he wanted to be able to tell people when things were maybe going wrong with the car or when he was coming in for a pit stop or whatever. So he simply had a pad of paper that was kind of mounted in the middle of the steering wheel, and he had a pencil, and he would jot down very simple words, you know, back tank empty, I think was the very first note that he ever wrote. And it's all, you see the photo of it, and it's all, you know, scribbly because he's bouncing along the salt at 120 miles an hour. And he'd take that piece of paper and he'd wad it up, and as he went past the pits, he'd throw it out, and someone would go, oh, go get that note. And someone would run out there and they'd open it up and they'd go, oh, it's back tank's empty. And pretty basic, but that's all he had. Radio was still in its infancy, and it certainly wasn't in a form that they could use out there.
So. That was
texting. My favorite was texting, absolutely, yes. Where he said, Horace, get me a pint of ice cream. Run alongside and hand it to me. And Horace went to town and got a pint of ice cream and went to hand it to him, and he went by at about 100. It hit his hand, smashed it to smithereens, and his hand was numb. But by golly, I think he still enjoyed that ice cream.
Well, I saw that note in your book, Louise, and I thought it was a joke. He really wanted ice cream?
Yeah. And not only did he want it, but when the boss asked for ice cream, you went and got ice cream.
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
John Green is with us along with Kurt Wallen, Louise Noeth. She's the author of the book Bonneville Salt Flats, The Fastest Place on Earth. We're talking about the film Boys of Bonneville, Racing on a Ribbon of Salt. Tonight at 6 o'clock, Mayor Ralph Becker and County Mayor Peter Caroon are going to be declaring Ab Jenkins Day, the newly restored Mormon Meteor, which we'll talk about when we get back from a break, along with some other cars, is going to be on display until 8 o'clock. For details about all of this, go to our website, KUER.org/Radio West. We should say that the filmmakers are going to be on hand at the 7:30 screening of Boys of Bonneville at Jordan Commons on Friday. We'll take a break. Back in a moment. This is Radio West on KUER and Sirius XM Public Radio. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're talking about the documentary film Boys of Bonneville, Racing on a Ribbon of Salt. The director, Kurt Wallen, is joining us here in the studio, along with John Green, producer and editor. The historian Louise Noeth is also with us. She's author of the book Bonneville Salt Flats, The Fastest Place on Earth. Well, let's talk about the Mormon Meteor, Mormon Meteor 3. That was the final incarnation of that car that most people have come to know now. Kurt Wallen, when did you first see it? It may have been like I did. Were you on like a field trip in the Capitol or like a scout thing or something or other? It used to be there at the Capitol, Meteor.
I think it was when I was a Cub Scout. So that was back in the mid-70s, right down there in the Capitol. Yeah, absolutely. Never forget it.
What made it a great car? Louise Noeth, let me start with you. What made it a great car?
Oh, my gosh. Well, let's start with the fact that it was hand-built by Augie Duesenberg. It was the last car that Duesenberg ever built, and it was hand-built with Marv Jenkins as a young kid. So when this came time to put the car back together again and Augie was long gone, the institutional and the tribal knowledge for that car resided in between the two ears of Marvin Jenkins, and he remembered with incredible detail exactly how that car went together because he had this great love for his father. And when he was putting this car together, everything that he did, every nut that was turned, every washer that was put, every bit of grease that was laid into that car and those bearings was done so for his dad and to keep him safe. So that was, it was like a rite of passage. It was, for them, I would say almost a religious experience, because that's how deeply it affected and remained with Marvin Jenkins. And when I met him many, many years later in the 90s, as a matter of fact, I want to mention that it was at his home in the basement, that same basement where Kurt was, that he got his 10,000 feet of film. I got my original details for the early part of the SALT. Marv opened up all of the family archives to me. I was there for a week. Marv's wife, Noma, gave me sandwiches and said, "You come up out of there for a while." And I was there for a week, and I literally started to write my Bonneville Salt Flats book. The very first writing and chapter was written in Marv and Noma Jenkins' basement in St. George, Utah.
Well, the Kurt Wallen, this is a lot of this film is about the fact that that car was handmade.
Yep.
We referred to this before, and what was really intriguing is a few people talk about how good, I think it was Marv who talks about how good a welder Augie Duesenberg was, for example.
Well, Augie is considered one of the greatest. He was the greatest car builder, an engineer. I don't think there's ever been anybody like that. And now we have all the computers.
Yeah,
it's just there's never going to be something like that again. Although, you know, today you do have your hot rodders
and such doing this,
but they use their computers. But for him to be out there pounding on metal, he used logs, tree logs, and would wrap the metal around it, pounding it just right. You know, you don't have a wind tunnel. He's watching the salt as it goes along the trails it would make to see how the aerodynamics would be, and he could adjust for that. He could adjust, as you see in the film or hear in the film, how he would weld by the smoke that would come off of the coals, and he'd know how to mix his mix for welding. This guy, I would love to have met him. It would have been something else. Mm-hmm. He is incredible.
In the days before electronic diagnostics for engines, he would hold his hand up to each of the 12 tailpipes on either side of the Curtis Conqueror engine, airplane engine that they used in the Mormon Meteor 3, and he would be able to tell how each cylinder was doing and how well it was, firing by the heat or not heat on his hand.
Heat and compression.
Yeah, and I should say that this engine that's in the car is an airplane engine. It's not a Duesenberg engine. It's a 12-cylinder Curtis Conqueror engine from 1924.
Yeah.
So when Ab acquired that, it was a used engine. You couldn't take it apart really either. So they had what they had. They had to tune it the best they could tune it. And in fact, Augie changed the exhaust system on that out in Wendover, and he took the one exhaust pipe off and put the 12 on the one side. He put it on with coat hangers. He actually welded with coat hangers.
Wow.
And I know the guy who actually did the modern coating of the engine, he did not want to touch those welds. He said, "That's the most incredible history ever," and they're still there. Coat hanger.
Louise Noeth, the body was offset 6 inches on its chassis. I mean, this is tailor-made for driving around that track.
Precisely, yeah. It was to help the suspension and, frankly, to help the driver as well, because, as they were saying, you know, you're locked in a left-hand turn for 24 hours or more, and it just helped that whole geometry of the car. So many people, unless you look at it straight on, you don't really notice it. But Marv pointed it out, and he said, "See that?" And as soon as he pointed it out, I went, "Oh, of course, this is a circular car." So it made sense. That was one of the first times it was ever done these days. I mean, you know, they saw all kinds of things. Duesenberg and Ab had this incredible friendship. Augie, I think, gave to Ab because he understood that Ab appreciated and used what Augie gave him to the absolute max degree. I mean, how many of us have a friend that we can provide some help and assistance to and knowing that they will take that help and take it to heights that we never thought possible? I mean, and then, Augie couldn't drive the car, but he knew Ab could. So it was a great partnership. And there's one thing I want to talk about. We're touching on something here, guys, but I want to dive into it. Ab Jenkins, I think you could be his ground zero for the attitude that persists to this day out at Bonneville, in that he shared – when he built everything out on the salt flats, because there was nothing there, when Cobb and Campbell and the guys from England came along, he didn't take all his stuff away and said, okay, you guys can set up your own and try and break my record. He left all of his materials, all of his cabins, all of the trailers. He left everything there to make it easy for the fellas from England to break a record. And even today, out at Bonneville, I cannot tell you, even this past speed week, you will see people who are in the same class competing for the same speed record. One will be closer to the record than the other, and the one that's closest breaks some part, and the person who is second in line to that record will take the part off of their car if need be, walk it over to the fellow or the gal that's closer, and give them the part to try and set that record. It is a family affair. As George Fields from Texas said, land speed racing used to be my hobby, and now it's my lifestyle.
Well, Kurt, this is an important part of the film, this idea of sharing. Certainly Ab Jenkins.
Yeah, in fact, what Louise said, Ab exemplifies Utah. He exemplifies, you know, if you're from Utah, you obviously know this. We're a caring state. Our people are pioneering. The ingenuity in this state's amazing. So that is exactly what this film is about. That's why people should see this. The entire family can see it. It's not just gearheads and such.
Yeah. What was it like to drive it? I read something that Jay Leno wrote about. He got a chance to drive the Mormon Meteor 3, and he wrote this. He's in the film, by the way, a number of times because he is a gearhead extraordinaire. But he said, although I only drove the Meteor a few hundred yards, I could feel the tremendous thrust. Engines now are more efficient, he writes, and they make more power, but there's nothing like those big displacement engines for torque. You let the gas out, the car leaps forward, and you say, geez, I didn't do anything. You're moving a lot of metal here, he writes, just to turn this thing. I think your arms would ache, but you're mechanically involved. So what's it like to it's a different experience to drive that thing.
Well, I haven't driven it, and nor do I want to because I'm not qualified to do something like that. I'd end up killing myself. But the best description is from Andy Green, the fastest man in the world right now. He came all the way out during the filming to drive a car 100 miles an hour just because of what it represented. And who better? He deserves that.
Yeah.
763 miles an hour to 100. He tells you, this is impossible. How could anybody sit in this rattling cage for that long? It is loud. It's a heavy car. You're riding the edge the whole time. Can you imagine 200 miles an hour turning circles at night? You know, you're out there, it's 18 hours into it, and you're just holding on for dear life and dehydrated at the same time.
Yeah, yeah,
so,
yeah.
Andy Green pretty much summed it up.
Well, here's a clip from the film. You'll hear Andy Green, but also the historian Donald Davidson. I think Alan Wilson is in there, Gordon Elliott White. And I like this, the racing legend Parnelli Jones, who you'll hear him try to get into this. He'll get into that thing to try to imagine what it was like for Ab Jenkins to drive it. Again, a clip from Boys of Bonneville.
I still marvel at the fact that Ab Jenkins could sit in that car and be as relaxed as he was. And it's not a modern saloon car sitting on the freeway. He was in that noisy, rattly, blaring beast with a huge number of exhaust pipes sitting up there in front of him. It would have been hell on earth in there, by most people's definition.
I mean, can you imagine 3 o'clock in the morning or 4 o'clock in the morning and the sun hasn't come up and you really should be in bed and you're running 180 miles an hour or whatever it is and you're not racing anybody?
It's a heavy car. It's hot. Try working your muscles lifting weights for 24 hours without putting them down.
That's an immense car and a challenge. Ab had to have a lot of muscle to control that car.
Oh, my God. I can't imagine.
Ab Jenkins out to smash his own record. From the film Boys of Bonneville. I want to ask about Louise Noeth, Marv Jenkins' determination to get his father's car restored. I mean, he was very disappointed seeing people like Kurt Wallen wandering around it there at the Capitol, and me and others, because you know it got into disarray. But you, this is a big part of the film, the idea of getting that put together, restored. John Price buys the film, and he very carefully has it restored. Roger, tell me Roger's name again, Kurt, from the
Roger Brazier.
Brazier. He's a terrific character, I have to say, in of himself. His affection for that car
is fantastic.
Touching and and really lovely. But Louise, you say in the film that Marv was damn determined.
Oh, he was damn determined. When I met him, and you got to understand, this was the classic, nice little track house I pull up to in St. George, come through the house, beautifully, you know, done, meet Noma, everything's just as you would imagine from someone in their 70s, you know, neat and tidy with the doilies. Never was I more surprised to see the Mormon Meteor in the two-car garage down below. And as Mara started to explain to me and show me pictures, I'm rather mechanically inclined for a number of years, I was aghast at this gorgeous car with this history was allowed to languish, and by the politician folks. But what I heard from this guy that was in his 70s, I didn't hear a 70-year-old man talking to me through wrinkles and glasses. I heard that kid with his funny little Bazooka Joe cap and the 10, 12-year-old kid who loved his father, who to that day retained that sense of awe and wonder and respect for what his father had done. And when you tried to go against anything that Ab had done or had the wrong idea, man, Marv was quick to correct you and make you understand that this was the way things were back then. It wasn't the way somebody kind of maybe remembered. He remembered because he lived it. That sense of love and respect, I'm sure, had a lot to do with not only their upbringing and their religious background, but it was pure respect, not only for his father, but for his father's dreams and ideals, which he shared, and he always took a back seat to, but never complained about. He was just always grateful to be there. Unlike some sons who would like to overshadow their father or their mentor, Marv never tried to be greater than his dad. He was always grateful just to be there with his father. And I had such respect and such empathy and affection for him because of that. And it made me want to write the best things about what Ab and he had done. I really felt he shared part of who they were. And I'd never met Ab Jenkins in my life. But I was so touched by his tremendous dedication and affection for his father, more affection than anything else.
That's Land Speed Louise Noeth, the author of the book Bonneville Salt Flats, The Fastest Place on Earth. John Green is producer and editor of the film Boys of Bonneville, Racing on a Ribbon of Salt. Kurt Wallen is the film's director. And Louise Noeth, thank you very much for being with us.
Oh, absolutely. My pleasure. For Ab, anytime. For Marv, anytime.
And Kurt and John, thank you very much.
I appreciate it.
As well. We should say tonight, from 6 to 8 o'clock, the Mormon Meteor and other race cars are going to be on display at the Rose Wagner Performing Arts Center in downtown Salt Lake City. It's part of an event declaring today Ab Jenkins Day in Salt Lake. On Friday, Boys of Bonneville is opening at the Jordan Commons Theater, where the Mormon Meteor will be on display again. And the filmmakers are going to be on hand for the 7:30 screening. But Kurt Wallen said there's an event earlier.
Around 5:30, Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, Cub Scouts can come and race Pinewood Derby cars, and the car is there, so you ought to come and see it.
For all the details, visit us at KUER.org/Radio West. Radio West, a production of KUER News. Technical direction from Mike Anderson. The program produced by Elaine Clark. I'm Doug Fabrizio.